This podcast is presented by Hannover Messe, your leading event for industrial AI.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a new episode of our Industrial AI podcast. My name is Robert Weber, and it's a pleasure to talk to
Peter Sieber. Good morning, Robert. Good morning, afternoon, evening to wherever you are, dear listener.
Good morning, Peter. You finally have a network again, so you can record.
Yeah, I was traveling.
How was your holiday?
I was traveling in Asia, and I did have a very irregular connection. Normally, I can solve that through my provider. We talk about another provider later on in the show, but this time, for whatever reason, I couldn't, until a day later, but then it was too late. I must say, you did a great job representing the pieces of information that I had suggested.
It was maybe the shortest news part we ever had, Peter.
Oh, really?
Yes.
So did we get any feedback? Is that what listeners want, or do they rather want us to talk about it?
No, no feedback on that. No, okay. I'm sorry for that. So I will start.
Please do.
While you were enjoying the sun, I was traveling a lot in the last 2 weeks, and my first stop was in Espelkamp. Do you know Espelkamp?
Oh, yeah. I've heard Espelkamp. It may actually be not too far away from where I was born, but confirm where exactly it is.
It's in East Westphalia. It's in the Connectors Valley. You have ever heard from the Connectors Valley?
I think I have, yeah. And if you explain to listeners that...
Yeah, the Connectors Valley is Harting, is there. Phoenix Contact is there, Vago is there. So this is a Connectors Valley, I would
say. My hypothesis was correct because on the western side of exactly that valley is then the border to the Netherlands. Is that correct?
Yeah, maybe a little bit of border.
What? Well, there never has been
a part of the border.
There never has been a real border there, but there you go.
Yeah.
Okay, and so what did you find out?
Yeah, I was able to open Harting's Industrial Ethernet Week, and the topic first day was Industrial AI. It was about vision, platforms, LLM, co-pilots. And I met Danny Smith from AWS there. Best wishes, all the best to you. A very smart guy, and we will record an episode. And we had a discussion about what happens to our startups when all the models become commodity. I think that's a big topic because a lot of European startups rely on their models. Mm. And my opinion is that all models will become commodity.
Wow.
And so what is now the business model for all the startups in Europe?
Stop a little bit. You're too fast because that's an amazing hypothesis. Do you want to repeat that? Just for those listeners. Very officially. I mean, that's a big thing you're telling there. Repeat it, what it is that you're saying.
So my opinion is that all model, not all, maybe 90% of the models, vision models, simulation models, they will become commodity. We will have a lot of foundation models for vision, for whatever, and this will change the whole business model for all our startups in Germany or in Europe, I think. Yeah,
it most certainly does. And the reason I asked you to repeat it is that, you know, whatever listener now is listening and was not aware of exactly this thought, this hypothesis that you have. I mean, they will immediately go back to their colleagues, to their, you know, whoever is in charge, and suggest, listen what Robert had to say. We should. So what does that mean?
It's only my opinion.
You have a very well informed opinion. It doesn't have to mean that you're going to be right, but it's and commodity means typically that you can't really earn money with something, right? So you start in a market where at the beginning you can really, really earn high level money with the first users. And then at the end, commodity means, there is nothing, no business model to be made, right?
Yeah, and I think maybe then you have to shift your business model completely, and maybe right. then you enter the market in to be a consultant company to help people to implement models, maybe. But this is not the idea of a lot of startups in Europe, because they want to invent something new, yet they don't want to be a consulting company.
But no, I don't want to be.
Think, they have to think about that. Sorry?
I don't want to be. I mean, I called myself... I was the first 10 years ago. I was the first AI consultant. People said, what is AI? I've never heard of AI. Huh? AI consultant? Are you crazy? And in the meantime, we all know that the consulting business is one of the things, of course, that models, called in foundation models, called in, what is it, generative or general AI, like the AI Act. And I think I haven't been using my term consultant as such anymore. But what it is that you were suggesting, I'm not sure that that's consultant, but it is like helping, yeah. You know, showing those companies that have no clue yet how to introduce the language models, how to do that, yeah. So, but that's very interesting. So you had a discussion on that topic at Harding?
We had a discussion on that topic. We will record an episode together.
Very good.
We will have a call this week, and we will discuss when we will record an episode on
this
topic.
So one question on that, then, where's the alternative then? So where does then the business potential lie? If it's not with models, where does it then lie?
That's a good question. Maybe in hardware again. We see a lot of new hardware.
Or data.
Maybe more in data, for sure. Maybe to build infrastructure pipelines, like MLOps pipelines, stuff like that. Maybe that. But I think the model is not the future yet.
But we have been thinking around this a couple of times, like for a couple of years probably even, you know, where we were thinking, you know, and I've been asking also our interviewees, you know, are you going to be selling, you know, your knowledge on whatever kind of, you know, numerical machinery, whatever specific kind of machinery you have, are you going to put it in a model? Are you going to be selling it or not? So at least so we've always been questioning in our interviews, right? So, and then if it would, you say hardware, not sure, everybody's going into at least silicon. We talk about that, RSML. And then in the end, maybe then the big hyperscalers, big tech, US, mainly China, the same, but we don't specifically follow that so strong, have, of course, been going for data since what? Since 10, 20 years, I guess. Yeah. So are they going to be right in the end? And is it only those? But then not necessarily only those. I mean, I think we've always said, the three pillars of what we've always said machine learning AI was always hardware, the data, and the algorithms, right? Yeah. And now models are probably algorithms, right? And of course, algorithms were always from the beginning. If today I have 100 algorithms, 99 of those, you know, are free, are open source. I make a call to write something, to select something. That's somebody 50 years ago put some thought into that, and today it's free, right? So, okay, very good. Interesting hypothesis.
Yeah, I found it's interesting that Harting put the topic at the forefront, because Harting produces connectors. But Harting also has a projection facility for sure, and uses vision systems for fault detection. And when we think at the end, the connector manufacturers also supply the infrastructure for industrial grade AI. So that makes sense. Yeah.
Okay.
So it was a very interesting experience in Aspelkamp. Now you know where is Aspelkamp. Thanks to Kilian and Aspelkamp, his team for inviting us.
Very good. Looking forward to your interview with Danny from AWS.
What about you?
Don't learn to code. Who said that?
The NVIDIA CEO. Yeah.
Yeah, his name is Jensen Huang, NVIDIA founder. Most people in the last 2 weeks have been talking about, I think, how NVIDIA shares doubled. Right. That's amazing, isn't it?
Do you have shares? No.
I'm not going to talk about that, because I've been saying something similar to don't learn the code for, I think, at least 12 months. And whenever I did that, I earned a shitstorm, right? But that's okay. Yes. So now it's kudos. I said kudo, not kuda, kudos. I say kudos to Jensen. But and nevertheless, when I shared the info last week, there was at least still 50% of the readers on LinkedIn that had their, I would say, their deflection shield on, right? It was sometimes still, again, getting a little bit aggressive, that sometimes really, really ashamed. Anyway, according to Jensen, that the mantra of learning to code or teaching your kids how to program or even pursue a career in computer science, which was so dominant over the past 10, 15 years, yes, I can confirm, has been thrown out of the window. Well, and that's a quote-unquote. And of course, people, and also you, dear listener, in there, but we have said it many, many, many times. If you want to stay in there, stay in there. Use Copilot, use whatever you want to use. I do strongly, of course, support this quote from Jensen. And I think it's going to be, in the end, it's going to be the day-to-day kind of coding, programming is going to be taking over, at least supported by Copilot kind of algorithms, applications. But that does not mean that we're going to need probably even more, lots more, I would call the background infrastructure coding. You know, all of the front end stuff needs to work and can only work if in the background, you know, everything that the real, I would say, complex stuff. And that's probably also going to be supported by certain co-pilots. I don't know. But as long as that is going to be working, right? So I'm probably not going to go into further details here, but I think in the end, you know, I think he talks about, that's one thing he talks about specifically then also about the domain expert, you know, and you and I have been talking for 5 years about the ever increasing role of the domain expert, right? So I am, you know, I understand what it is that he's saying. And again, he and we are not saying that today, you know, everybody can go home now. We're not saying that. But it's looking into the future. It's looking into the next couple of years. And I think I've always been saying, you know, it's also, if you, dear listeners, if you have children and they're close to, you know, going to whatever kind of education, I think it's very, very important that you do explain them, you know, how all of this that we talk about, you know, what are language models or what is ChatGPT and what is open source and how is it all? And maybe you can do that as parents, and it would be very good. I do believe that young people get educated on the topic at a high level. So whenever they get into working sometime later, they have an idea what it's all about.
Okay. So I will go on with my second stop last week, the Bosch Connected World in Berlin.
Right.
And there it was even more about AI in the car, in hydraulics, and in the manufacturing. Then there was an announcement on the first day that was very interesting, because I will explain. So Thomas Fechner, he's a member of the executive board of Bosch Rexroth, presented the topic of AI and Control X. Control X is their open PLC platform. And then all of a sudden, the logo of Landing AI appeared on the PowerPoint slide. Fechner announced the partnership in the Control X world. And what I found interesting was that hardly anyone in the audience really realized what Landing AI is. So two mechanical engineers sat next to me and asked me what it was, what is Landing AI.
You may want to spend two sentences also, maybe for those listeners who are not aware of what Landing AI is.
Yeah, I will go on. And even when Andrew Ng joined in, many of them still had question marks. Who is this guy? And from my point of view, it is a very smart move by Rexroth to be partner, to get Landing AI as a partner. And yeah, I have a short interview with Thomas Fechner about it, and we will listen to it, and he will explain what they are going to do with Landing AI.
It was a brilliant story. Landing AI was working together with our colleagues at Bosch in automotive. So this is how we get connected. And of course, Landing AI is another star in it. Yeah. So we are really proud. For us in particular, it's important for our computer vision approach, because we are not offering computer vision from our own solutions. We are really believing in partners there. This market is so fast and innovation acceleration is so strong that we like to leverage the ecosystem here and pull in the right partners to offer for our customers always the on-the-edge solution. And Lending AI, of course, is one of these. The ecosystem is growing further. Yeah, it gives attractiveness. Our customers have, again, more innovative solutions. And this attracts further partners. And this is how the ecosystem profits. And we have to bring OT, IT together. So the platforms from us, the platform from Lending, is right now, as we speak, they attach it and make the first POCs.
So it's very interesting. So we are really looking forward to see the first use cases they will realize with Lending AI. And it's quite interesting that they first came from the automotive industry, from Bosch Automotive, and now they are going in the manufacturing side, also with Lending AI. So congrats to the team. Yeah.
Well, that's what Lending AI really is about, right? It's one of the breakout activities that Andrew, you know, who I learned machine learning from 10 years ago. In the meantime, I believe like close to 10 million people have seen his introduction to machine learning. And that's also, I believe, where this, you know, Stefan Sulak, what is it called? Data-centric AI.
Data-centric approach, yeah.
So, of course, you know, Andrew has been one of the top, I would say top three, four, five people on introducing artificial intelligence to the world, right? And has then, as far as I understand, with Lending AI, has been concentrating his knowledge on regarding machine learning onto computer vision kind of application vision, yeah. In an industrial environment, right?
Yeah. And yeah, I was very impressed to see then the logo at the PowerPoint slide and nobody in the, or not nobody, a lot of people had big question marks. Yeah.
Those people who have been following us, you know, they would have known, right? Because we've been talking about Andrew for at least a year or two. So does that now mean that we're going to be able to have an interview with Andrew at some point in time as well?
Oh, I hope so. I told Thomas to make a connection to Andrew. So now Thomas has to deliver. Yeah. So Thomas, please, we want to have an interview with both of you, Thomas and Andrew, talk about industrial AI when you realized your first use case. Yeah.
That would be really good. Perfect. Yeah.
And then there were sessions with Aleph Alpha, but they were rather disappointing, I must say. Another interesting presentation was by Josef Waltl. He's from Software-Defined Automation. And I will do an interview with him too, because he doesn't use Gen AI to write code. He uses to explain code to employees as a translator, you would call it. That's very, very interesting. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So he turns it 180 degrees round. Like, so maybe the software that has been written by coders or not, or by co-pilots. And then he looks at it. He has the whatever, his Jenny, I look at it and explain it to, who is it then? To coders or to people at a higher level?
No, maybe people who are not familiar with this code.
So domain experts, maybe.
Yeah. And new guys in the manufacturing at the shop floor. Because IEC 61131 is not taught anymore at the universities. So you need to talk about other programming languages, but the most languages in the industry.
PLC coding that you just talked about?
Yeah.
Is that PLC coding or what?
Yeah. And you have to translate that to a new generation, maybe. And it's a very cool approach. I will have an episode with him too. I think that was very interesting. Yeah.
Okay. Should I take over?
Yes.
Hani Swaki Malipas.
Who is that?
What?
What is that?
That's a piece of French.
Hey, it's Barbara, the one with the PLCs. Peter, you're the AI expert, but not a French expert. I didn't understand a word. I think you meant on y soit qui mal y pense. And now explain us what that means.
I come to it later. But I think the translation is something like shame on anyone who thinks badly. Now, this is a quote that I read from Philip Hacker. He's a professor of law technology at the Europe University Viadrina, Frankfurt Oder, that is. Yeah. Now, what is it about? It's about Microsoft, the Mistral, you know, the link here to Aleph Alpha. They announced a corporation, right? And for those of you that do not know, in this case, it's another one. Mistral has been, I would say, the European language model darling, kid on the open source block, right? And so what that means, I understand that Mistral is leaving the open source path. You maybe know more about that. I think I've been reading that they've always had both closed and also open source. Microsoft puts like $50 million into it, into DIM, and they will host the Mistral language ones on Azure. Now, the only thing I believe that happened is that politicians, they feel pulled over because the Mistral CEO, Arthur Mensch, right? I've been asking him for an interview in the past, but he hasn't reacted. So he had been spearheading, and he was strongly supported. I believe they say he's rather intertwined with the French government, right? Later, there was support from Italy, maybe from Germany, but then the people who are in charge say that was not correct. But anyway, what came out of the AI Act was like a tailor-made exemption for Open Source Foundation. They call it general AI models without a system risk. And that was exactly tailor-made for, at that time, Mistral, right? And then, you know, only 2 weeks after a compromise was agreed, you know, Mistral goes to, that is the feeling. Now,
Honi soit qui mal y pense.
Shame on anyone who thinks badly of it means, you know, of course, the politicians say this was not made for them. Anyway, in the bottom line, I would say, you know, apart from this political chaos, and I do not want to go into the details of that, I don't think that's a topic really of our podcast, but I would say, you know, there's other European contenders. You already mentioned Olive Alpha, there's Silo.
Oh yeah, I met the Silo guys.
Talk about that as well then. So we're going to be doing an interview maybe today or tomorrow, I don't know, with Peter Sarlo. And of course, not to forget our, you and my personal darling new kid on the block, NXAA, right? So in the end, Honi soit is I knew it. I knew the quote. It's a French quote. I knew it from a song from John Cale, which I listened again to this morning.
Yeah. The Silo AIs, they were pretty happy about the Mistral message that plays in their hand, because they are open. They are founded by this European program Horizon 2025 or something. And they're opening an office in Munich, and I think they invited you. I think you have to, you can join it.
At the time of recording, actually, it's tonight. We need to discuss afterwards. Yep. Maybe I'm going to be able to go there for an hour, not more. But I'll report on that later. And one way or the other, we're going to be doing an interview with Peter. So, but you already met the guys.
I met the guys at the Bosch Connected World. So that's it. Peter, or do you have anything else?
I have one final one. So app-free smartphones. So another quote, who needs apps? You know, I'm going to relate this message, which is from Deutsche Telekom. So another provider, not the one that I used when I was in Asia. There was another one. So similar to Jensen, you know, who needs to learn coding? Who needs apps? And why I bring these two together? Because in my view, it's all part of one and the same revolution. Oh, I would call it an evolution. Since a long time, I've seen this, that we as hardware builders, as coders, as ITers, as whatever we are, that we are continuously adding capabilities on top of each other. There's so many layers at the moment. Two words. For the next couple of years, maybe I would say personal assistants. And then what we're going to add in 5 years on top of those personal assistants, you know, who knows? That's for the future looking people. So have a great thought. You know, tell ChatGPT, ask it to code it for you. You know, that's the Jensen or my personal view on how that's going to happen. Want to book a flight? Tell your AI phone. The AI phone is how Deutsche Telekom they call their concept of a new type of smartphone in which the user no longer sees any apps. Consider you open your smartphone and it's empty. The only thing you always do with this thing, and then maybe then, I'm not sure what the name of that thing is that is close to your, you stick it close to your your breast or your whatever you're talking, right? Because then it doesn't have to be a screen, maybe. Well, maybe the screen is an output still, but nevertheless. So I think it's very interesting if we're going to see it like that. I've heard that, you know, the CEO of Brain Technologies is in there. Mm-hmm. There was Qualcomm is included. Let's see. My feeling is it's all, so I already showed my feeling of what it is doing in the near future. And looking backwards, it goes back to the original quote from Sepp, you know, 5-6 years ago. And for that reason, I had to look at our new website. Maybe you want to mention that as well. And that was the speaking NC machine, right? Domain expert, how are you doing, machine? A machine says, I'm just fine. Mm-hmm. You know, just filled up my ear level. So it's all moving in this direction. And I'm a believer. I can imagine very, very well that I'm going to be using my next phone, that I don't need to necessarily have my brain first decide which of the apps am I going to be using. No, I just request my digital assistant to help me, right?
That's very interesting, because we have now a connection to our main part, and right. We have an interview with Jens Wonneberger from automotive supplier Mann and Hummel. And Jens, that's very interesting, is not an AI developer. He's a CISO, and he explains the rules for dealing with the co-pilot at Mann and Hummel. Very interesting episodes. I think everybody can learn a lot for their company. So enjoy listening, and thanks, Peter, for being back in Germany and have a good internet connection. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Robert. Looking forward to, and wish all of you, dear listeners, a wonderful day, evening, morning, wherever, whatever you're doing. Take care.
Bye-bye. My guest today is Jens Wonneberger, and he works for Mann and Hummel in Ludwigsburg. Normally, we have CTOs, AI specialists, engineers, R&D managers, developers, but today an IT security man. That could be something very different. Hello, Jens. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Robert, for having me. Hi.
Hi. Jens, as I said, we have CTOs. That could be something very different with you. I have never met such an open-minded security manager before. So you are a real AI fascinated guy. Please introduce yourself briefly to the listeners.
Thank you, Robert. So to my introduction, Jens Wonneberger, I'm working as a chief information security officer at Mann and Hummel since 2022. Mm-hmm. Before that, I had several positions in different companies like Daimler, Mercedes-Benz Bank, Süd Leasing, Süd Factoring. And I also served as an IT officer for 12 years in the German Armed Forces.
Oh, wow. So we met each other in December because you invited us to your digital days, and we had some live podcasting on stage, and we discussed the topic Gen AI, ChatGPT, large language model is a big topic for the whole industry. And then you told me, yes, we have some special rules at Mann and Hummel since last year. And today we want to talk about these rules. First question is, where do you use ChatGPT or a co-pilot at Mann and Hummel?
So I personally use Bing Chat Enterprise and also MH Copilot since December 23 in my daily life to do Excel, Word, and PowerPoint. And I'm gaining experience every day more and more, and it's really fun to work with it.
In the moment, you are focused on office applications, right? But
definitely
in the future, it could also be engineering and in the design phase, but this is the future.
Absolutely. And currently, we are also trying to use the co-pilot for security, and there will be many more options that we see. For example, also the co-pilot for Power BI. And we see different departments in our company, like intellectual property and also the engineering parts and many others, for example, controlling, HR and so on, they are really interested in how they can work together with the artificial intelligence in their daily life and to make things easier.
When colleagues use LLMs or ChatGPT in particular, from a security point of view, do you sometimes have worries?
Absolutely. So when we started to use ChatGPT from OpenAI in December 2022. This was a big change to know that our people, not only me at home, but also our colleagues, and we could see then in our CASB where we can see what different software as a service solutions are used by Mannenhammel. And we saw that it every day there were more and more colleagues using OpenAI, and we had to react fast. But what we didn't want to do is to react like forbidding to use this new technology, because it's so important that our colleagues are getting used to, but we have to have rules on that, that mm-hmm. our colleagues knew what they were allowed and what they had to not to use. So the do's and don'ts.
Is it typically German?
Maybe, but several months later, we saw on a big company in Asia that their employees use too many information about their company mm-hmm. at ChatGPT, and other customers saw this information. So I was really relieved that mm-hmm. we made these rules up, and they were rules that everyone could accept, because we work together with different departments. Also at Mannenhammel, it's not that the CISO says we are using it or we don't use it. It's the question about how we want to use it. And therefore, I was in discussion with different stakeholders like intellectual property, compliance, legal, HR, and never forget the Workers' Council on that, mm-hmm. and data protection and information security and IT security. And we figured out how we want to use it. And in the first step, we saw that the public use of ChatGPT, we have the rules that it's like every other internet service out there, which isn't approved to use for company information. So we said to our employees, you can use it, but don't use company and don't use customer and don't use employee information on this tool. You can play with it, but not with our information. And this was the start.
Okay. And now you explain us your rules. How many rules do you have, Jens?
Our digitalization program manager Alexander Lapp came up with the idea to make four different stages, because okay. at first we had to discuss what is our AI strategy, what mm-hmm. do we want to use. We discussed it with digitalization, information security, and several departments in the IT or within the IT. Do we want to use the products from Microsoft or other big companies? Mm-hmm. Do we want to use startup mm-hmm. or do we want to build our own LLMs mm-hmm. to use? And it was a big discussion in the first half of 23 to get a strategy for that. And then we said we are currently focusing on the Microsoft products. Mm-hmm. And so the idea was to separate the different stages, like ChatGPT for public. Mm-hmm. And then on the internal side, the Microsoft Bing Chat Enterprise, the Microsoft 365 Copilot, and the Microsoft Azure OpenAI. Mm-hmm. And then for every of these services, we gave our employees the information, what they can do with it, what are the do's and the don'ts, so everyone knows that. And for example, we said, as I said, ChatGPT outside, never use company information like in Google Translate and other software as a service solutions. But on the inside, after Microsoft had their meetings with us and explained how they doing their concept, their architecture, that when we are using Microsoft Bing Chat Enterprise within the company, our information will stay inside our tenant. And mm-hmm. even in the Edge tab, when I'm using it and when I'm closing it, it's gone. So this was really important that no information will leave the company. So we said that our employees are allowed to use internal and even confidential information inside. But before that, we had to go one more round with legal and compliance to say what is really strictly confidential and what is confidential. And in this moment, we decided, for example, that all our customer information from the big OEMs, from the auto manufacturers, they are strictly confidential and they are not allowed to be used within the Microsoft Bing Chat Enterprise. And also it is not allowed to use personal identifiable information, PII, because our data protection officer, who has contact with many other DPOs and also with authorities, said, so he is not convinced, and also the others, that Microsoft is so good at Microsoft Bing Chat Enterprise that we could trust them with our PII data. So this was the second step.
Okay.
And the next step is that we say, so we haven't it now, but with Microsoft Azure OpenAI, when we have one instance in our own tenant, there we can go to the next step because Microsoft convinced us with the architecture that we can have a safe space where we can put data inside, for example, our policies. Mm-hmm. And then in the next moment, our employees can ask this area with their prompts. For example, am I allowed to go to the dinner with this salesperson and the dinner costs 35 euro? Is it allowed in China, in the US, or in Germany? Mm-hmm. So this is a huge step, but it's not the training material. Okay. So we can say, no, this information, I don't like to have it there anymore, and we can put it outside. So as a risk-based approach, every step we go, the improvements and the allowances are getting higher. Mm-hmm. And the last step is Copilot, because Copilot has access to every information the user has in his user context. And in this moment, it's not that easy to say that some information are too strictly confidential, that they are not allowed to be used in Copilot.
But how do you train now your employees on these rules? Don't be stupid. Is this the most important rule?
Yeah, we don't have the technical ones. We are mm-hmm. currently working on with the Microsoft labeling mm-hmm. To get also the intellectual MIP or AIP. So we can see what kind of information is given to prevent this. Okay. But we said we are doing this by giving the information to the employees. We send mails to everyone. We gave the information into our intranet. And for example, outside with ChatGPT for public, we used a proxy website that comes up every several days to the employees using the ChatGPT outside, where it says, don't be stupid. Don't use this and that information. You are not allowed. And greetings from Workers' Council, HR, legal compliance, and so on. Then are reminded of that. Then they click on submit and then they can use it. And we trust our employees that they won't use it to our harm.
So can you please explain it a bit? What is this announcement or the information I will get there?
Yeah, so it's quite the same announcement and information we gave our employees with an email to all Wannenhammel employees. But now, every once in a while, our colleagues, when they go on the public ChatGPT website, where we say, don't use company information and employee information, it says, please use this website responsible. Mm-hmm. So you have your information. It explains that with this website and any other website like Google Translate and so on, mm-hmm. don't use this information. Mm-hmm. And on the next step, do you have questions about artificial intelligence? Feel free to join our Teams chat. And we set up an AI at Mannenhammel chat where all the employees they are interested in, and these are the employees that are using ChatGPT, then they come to us and then they are all together in this team chat and we can discuss their future approach because they want to know what are the next step within Mannenhammel.
And you will see what's happening in all the offices.
Exactly.
They are doing when some private llama stuff.
Exactly. And also we have the link to our SharePoint to the artificial intelligence part, where we explain everything in detail, what is allowed and what is not allowed, and where you can find more information and so on. And then in the end, we say, as always, let's stay safe together and your information security, data protection, commercial, legal, corporate communications, and intellectual property, all the different departments that are always working so perfectly together to get these new things straight.
But I think that's important for the success of this whole story, that you work together with a working council, with the compliance guys, with the engineering guys, that nobody stops the progress, but work on a solution to handle this progress.
Absolutely. And everyone has his own perspective. And we find a way that every department and every risk-based department is satisfied with the solution. And then we have a solution for us and for Mannenhammel and we can look into the bright future together.
Can you give me, when I now I'm an employee at Mann & Humble and come to you, to your office, and ask, I want to use Bing Chat, I want to use a Copilot, I want to use ChatGPT maybe when I'm working from home. Can you give me the three main rules?
Yeah, it depends on what you want to use. So, okay. As I said, when you use the public one, don't use company information.
Yeah, true.
But when you use Bing Chat Enterprise, you are allowed to use it in your daily life to ask ChatGPT and get the information out of it from the web and also from internal data. Mm-hmm. You can use also the image generation, which is great, and I'm also using in my presentations with DALL-E. But the information is, don't enter the strictly confidential company information and also no EII. And when you use Microsoft 365 Copilot within the Office integration, there are no limits in your daily life because it has access to every document you are using. And on the other hand, you can't put inside information that you're not allowed to. And it's not information and data that is used to train the model. And this is where we got convinced that when it doesn't train the model in our tenant and more important outside at OpenAI, we have a good feeling and this is the right decision. Because there is also the frightenment of every company that when we say we are not that fast in it and we wait and we forbid and let's see what the others do and maybe in 5 years we jump on the train too, then the others were faster. And
absolutely.
And we also have to reflect the risk appetite from our senior leadership team and our management. And there I can absolutely see that we don't want to do stupid things, but with the risk in mind, we want to do business and the right things, and therefore we have these rules.
ChatGPT LLMs is a new technology. And how difficult was it from your point of view to learn how it works, which databases are used, how the architecture works? How difficult was it for the security guys to understand it?
So one good thing is within Microsoft Bing Chat Enterprise, there is directly the link to the FAQ, to all the information about the security. And we read it really well. And there are video material and long texts explaining everything. But we also have our very good contacts to Microsoft and they send their technicians and we had meetings with them and they explained every step and they gave us their information material. So we could figure out if we trust this architecture or we do not. And the material they showed us, it was so convincing that we said we trust it and we can use it within Mann & Humble.
I want to come back to this data topic because LLMs, ChatGPT, whatever you call it, the LLMs need data. But there are also data hierarchies in companies. How do you avoid incorrect access by an LLM? How do you do that?
This is really a good question because I have expected this experience at Daimler and in Mann & Humble. I had a deja vu when we invited to our employees the first time at Microsoft Search, the business search. So when the IT invited it or introduced it, many of our colleagues were really frightened and scared because they saw files they thought they shouldn't see. And this is because in your daily life, you don't try to look into other file shares and other SharePoints and so on because you don't have the time and you are not used to and you don't, but the machine does. So the enterprise search from Microsoft as also a Copilot, it looks everywhere it can in this moment. It looks just where the user context is. But many people said that now they see for the first time that they see information. This is not correct. They shouldn't see it. And then the next step was that last year in January, when the IT implemented the Microsoft Enterprise Search, we had a lot of work to tidy up Mann & Humble to get the SharePoint rights straight, that everything is that restricted as it should be. So we always have the need to know and the least privilege concept. And for that, we did the tidy work. And from a timing perspective and to look back how the things worked out, it was a really good time to do this before we saw Microsoft Copilot in our company. Because now we are almost done with everyone can only see what he should. And this means that when I do my prompts in Copilot, he really only has access for me as a user to the information I should.
Yeah, but I think that's a very, very important point. And I think most companies are not aware what they have to do before. Or am I wrong?
Yeah.
So you are a big company, but maybe for mid-sized companies, I'm not sure. I'm really not sure.
Yeah. And maybe also Microsoft and so on should help there more in when they start the implementation projects. You get your facts straight, who can access which document. So in my mind, I have this diagram on the XX. I see this is public information, internal, confidential, and strictly confidential. And on the YX, I see to this documents or information, everyone in the world has access. To this, only Mann and Hummel. To this, only this department. And to this, only this kind of people. And then I would like to have this whole chart for all the information. And then I would like to hunt every strictly confidential information that is accessible for the public or whole Mann and Hummel and so on. So this is the perfect step to do before introducing Copilot and all the other techniques. But yeah, it's not that easy to get this information and to get this diagram.
Yeah, absolutely. One more question at the end. What are you doing in the as a security officer with LLMs at Mann and Hummel?
Yeah, for example, last year we wrote new standards for Mann and Hummel and new policies, and it was perfect to when we had discussions and also at the start. So we did not just say, write me a policy and we copy paste that and we are now using it, but to get the creative information from Copilot and the, also the discussion with Copilot or mid BingChat Enterprise about several interesting points in information security, because it's not always right or wrong. It's more a risk-based approach. And then it's really helpful to have an assistant who can write the first drafts of standards, policies, and so on. And then you can go in and do it better. It's really helpful. When we are doing summaries from our policies for our employees, I can also say now to Copilot, take this 20 pages document and summarize it to a one or two pager with three nice pictures. And this is a really good starter, because then I can also say and do it not that an information security or a cybersecurity expert understands it, but do it that every employee understands it. And this is really helpful for us.
Do you think that you have to adapt your rules in the next few months with new technology, with new LLMs, with new approaches, with new ideas? We still don't know what is also possible in the future. Are you able to adapt very fast?
We have to, but in the beginning, when we said ChatGPT for public, what you can do and what you can't do, this was our old rule. This rule existed forever when we said no information to the public. So we hadn't to do a new rule. We just had to remind our employees what there was, forever.
Yeah.
And in the future, when we see the AI Act up front, of course, we have to do new rules, new policies, and we have to separate and categorize our existing application to reflect the rules that the AI Act brings us. And we have to write new policies for that. But for the rest, when we introduce, for example, LLMs within Mann and Hummel, it's always the same rules. Like when you introduce some other applications, you have to do your homework, you have your operational concept, you have your information classification, you have to think about the whole life cycle of introducing the new application and also the exit strategy and so on. So there are only a few things that really come up from a security perspective regarding the information security with artificial intelligence. On the other hand, when I go some steps deeper to the IT security, there are completely new approach to think about the architecture, for example, prompt injection.
Okay, yep.
Never heard of that 5 years ago, but there are so many things that our IT security guys now have to learn. Yeah, and poisoning and so on. I'm really frightened of that. And so I'm really happy to learn that Bing Chat Enterprise and also the Copilot isn't training our own LLM as a training material, what we give inside, because when we would do that, we would have to think about poisoning and so on.
One last question, because I'm interested. You mentioned Daimler. You work for Daimler and different companies. When do you talk to your colleagues from other companies? How do they do it?
Quite different. So we learn from each other. For example, I've learned this great approach to do a proxy website in front of ChatGPT from my fellow colleague, Stefan Baldus from Hugo Boss, for example, because they had it first and I really like this approach. And so we get information from right and left, from other CISOs, from other IT securities. But I also learned that there are companies, they are really strict. They said in the first moment, this is a US company and Microsoft, and there is a trust issues as they are right now. And we say that in our company, it's forbidden to use this technology, especially the finance sector, who always have to be more restrict and more risk averse than other companies. So different approaches, but I also know a lot of colleagues that they are the same excited about these new technologies, and they also want to see their colleagues within their engineering and other departments to use this technology to build better products and to gain information and to connect it. And
One more question. I have also one more question. You mentioned maybe in the near future, engineering design is a topic. Do you also think about own LLMs, because there's a huge right brand of open source LLMs you can use by your own, building small LLMs for specific tasks at Mannenhummel, only inside of the ecosystem of Mannenhummel, only for the shop floor, only for the design offices, only for the engineering guys. Is that a possibility? Is it a way to go?
Absolutely. So currently they are working on a POC for Microsoft Azure OpenAI, we call it then MH ChatGPT. And there are so many departments they want to try it out. For example, the engineering, but also the intellectual property with the lawyers, and also the controlling when they see their financial data. And with every GPT that will come up with that, we have to look inside how they use it, what kind of data they are using. Is it secure enough? But I'm really pushing and hoping that we are fast with that, because this is the future in my mind.
Jens, it was a pleasure. Thank you very much, and all the best for your company and your ChatGPT experience at Mannenhummel. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Robert.